Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Dark, Dangerous, and Deadly. I'm your host, Bridget M. So, 2 weeks ago, we started telling you the story of the Toy Box Killer, and we have gotten to the last victim, but now, this week, we're going to touch base on all the others. So, warning. This episode is going to include very graphic descriptions of rape. We're going to talk about a lot of sensitive topics. So just be ready because it's going to get really intense. Okay, so we're going to pick up exactly where we left off. So if you haven't heard the first episode, please go back. That was 2 weeks ago. Go back, re-listen to that, and then come back to this, okay? Okay, so at this point in the story, Cynthia has been captured. They've strapped her up to the table or whatever, and they play the tape. So, after the tape was played is when her real torture is going to begin. She would endure beatings, rapes, electric shock. I mean, she'd be forced to perform oral sex on both David and Cindy, all while being starved and made to piss and shit in a bucket. So after a few days of this, David went to work, leaving Cindy alone with Cynthia. Cindy thought that Cynthia was passed out, so she removed the leg and arm chains, but left like that collar thing on her. Then she starts like talking on the phone and just absentmindedly leaves the keys like on a table that's close to where Cynthia is chained up. So Cynthia sees this as an opportunity and she takes it. She stretches herself out as far as she can, pulling the table closer and grabbing the keys off. But then she realizes, like, if Cindy was to come in at this moment, she'll see the table moved and she'll know that I'm up to something. So she quietly pushes the table back and unlocks herself, the collar on her neck. She unlocks it. So at this point that she unlocks the collar, Cindy comes in the room and she sees this and she just attacks Cynthia. So they're fighting for a while and Cynthia grabs like a lamp and just smashes it over Cindy's head. And this kind of like obviously knocks her off balance. She falls. And this at this very second, Cynthia decides this is my chance. And she takes the phone, she dials 911, and she just leaves it so that they can hear that there's a, you know, there's an altercation going on and hopefully send the police. So this obviously is the 911 call that we heard or that, you know, we heard of earlier on in the first episode. So Cindy regains herself and she attacks Cynthia again. And Cynthia sees like there's like an ice pick on the floor. Now, why there's an ice pick, I have no idea. I'm sure that it had something to do with torture. Sorry. So Cynthia grabs this ice pick and she stabs Cindy like in the, some sources say in the throat area, like where your collarbones are, but then some people say like she stabbed her in the chest. So I don't really know, but she stabbed her in that area somewhere and she runs. So of course, police start questioning David and Cindy separately. They don't want them to be able to like discuss anything or like work out an alibi or anything like that, you know? So when questioning David, he literally says that they kidnapped her, but only to help her get over her addiction. He goes on to say that the chains were necessary because of how violent people can get during the withdrawal period. Now, it is a thing. Like, when someone is going through withdrawal, they can get really violent. But that's because, you know, I guess you have to understand withdrawal. Like, so the person, their body is literally hurting. Like, they are in so much pain. It's a pain that, like, nobody else can understand. And they are just going to fight as hard as they can to be able to get the drug that they need to make themselves feel better. Now, I know of people that have had to have gone through this, and they describe it as like the worst thing that they have ever experienced in their life. So that's why people get violent. It's not like they just, you know, like their body just starts convulsing or something and like they become like possessed. But still, you don't chain somebody up. Like, that's just, I mean, obviously that makes no sense. So the police obviously didn't believe a word of it for obvious reasons. But so the next day, the search warrant was approved for the house. Now, remember, they did go into the house and they did snoop around a little bit. But anything that they would have found, they couldn't actually use in court because they didn't have a search warrant. So it's actually against the law. So they needed the search warrant to be able to go and search the entire premises and then gather up any type of evidence that they may need to go to trial. So in the house, like I previously stated, they found the beds and chains, a plethora of DIY sex toys, clothing, and jewelry from not only Cynthia, but other unknown people as well. And although it sounds crazy, the real crazy part is the famous toy box. Now, this was a 25-foot soundproof truck trailer that was parked next to the house. As soon as you walked in, you could see a gynecologist chair near the far wall. There were more DIY sex toys, including but not limited to, get this, a dildo that was fashioned out of a PVC pipe. It had ruler markings on it and nails that were embedded, sticking both upward and outward, meaning that when it was used on, you know, the woman, it would literally be able to rip her to shreds. So doesn't that sound like so much fun? So they also found a ton of chains, surgical tools, gynecology tools, and pictures of torture, along with two video cameras. We'll return to the story in just a second. Let's just take a moment to listen to a word from our sponsor. Now, I'll post pictures and links and all that stuff over on my Facebook. I might put some links in the description of the video. I'm not too sure. But also, don't forget, I do have a YouTube, and I will be making like a slideshow of these pictures, and any other links and stuff like that will be posted to the YouTube channel, and I'll let you know as soon as that video is ready. So now the torture chamber. They find about 100 videotapes. And so they start going through all these videotapes, and a bunch of them really had nothing like of any type of significance on them, but there was one. Now, the tape starts off with David doing a sound check. So basically, he's just doing his little check, 1, 2, and he's walking around the room, and he's by the gynecology chair in the toy box and stuff. And but then it like just cuts out. When it comes back on, there's a woman in the chair, and you can see her like she's moving around, but she's moving around in a very sluggish manner. Like, you can tell that she's just really out of it. She definitely looks like that she's been, you know, probably drugged. And so he's like rubbing her and he's touching her. It's so disgusting. If you watch it, it just makes you want to puke. Like, this guy literally has this woman strapped up, drugged her, touching her. Like, he's really getting satisfaction from this. So as the police are watching the tape, they see that this woman actually has a tattoo. So obviously they're thrilled because now this tattoo can help them to determine who this woman is and get, you know, a story of what she dealt with so that she can be a witness at the trial and they could really put him away for a long time. So they take the video to the FBI where the FBI would be able to enhance the image. So that's exactly what they do. They have the image enhanced and then law enforcement goes to the media. So they go to the news, the newspapers and all that stuff. And they put this picture of this tattoo out with like a little thing that says like, if you recognize this tattoo, please contact the detectives of whatever. And you're not going to believe this crazy story. So a woman comes forward and says that the tattoo belongs to her. And she was identified as 25-year-old Kelly Van Cleve. So when they start to talk to Kelly Van Cleve, they start asking her about David Parker Ray. And she's like, yeah, you know, I know who he is. He was my friend's father. And then they said, well, have you ever been to the house? And she's like, no, you know, I've never been there. And they said, well, we have a video of you there. And she was really confused by this. Like, she had no idea what they were talking about. And they're telling her, like, we have a video and we're going to show you the video. And we want to know, like, is this you? Like, you know, and so they show her the video. And then they give her the voice recording, which is the tapes that I, you know, the transcript that I did last week. And that's when she realizes that these nightmares that she's been having for years weren't actually nightmares. They were her remembering the nightmare that she actually lived through. So this is where we get some like conflicting reports, but I'm going to give you the one that I've heard the most. And I mean, I don't know if everything is accurate. I tried to look up to find out the actual like story from the girl. But the thing about it is that when she discusses the situation that happened to her, she doesn't touch base on some of these things and they're never asked of her. So I'm just going to give you my take on it. And if anyone can, you know, send me to the right area where I can later on make any corrections, I would appreciate that. Okay. So, at this time of her abduction, Kelly was married. And it was on about July 24th, 1996, that her and her husband had gotten into a fight. And so basically, if they ever got into a fight, she would just kind of leave and go to the bar, hang out with her friends, and just let everything cool down. That was just kind of the thing that she did. So she went to the bar, and she's playing pool with some friends, and then she runs into an old friend of hers, Jesse Ray. So when Kelly's friends are ready to call it a night, Kelly decided to just stay and catch up with Jesse, have some drinks, or have a drink. And so she gets up, she uses the bathroom, and Kelly, like, you know, like, any woman knows, when you get up to go to the bathroom, you always pass your drink to your friend and say, hey, can you keep an eye on this? So that's what she did. When she comes back from the bathroom, she continues to drink her drink and talk with Jesse. But then she starts feeling really drunk. And it was weird for her because she said she only had one drink. So this kind of like made her nervous. And she was like, you know what? I don't really feel good. Would you mind like driving me home? And Jesse is like, of course, you know, I'll bring you home. No problem. Oh, but I have to stop at my house first. You know, is that okay? So Kelly's like, okay, yeah, no problem. So they pull up to Jesse's house and Jesse's like, oh, I'm going to run inside really, really fast. Do you want to come in? So Kelly was like, okay. So she goes inside And Jesse immediately goes into the kitchen or something, and she's talking with her dad. And her dad comes out, and I guess Kelly's back was turned to the dad, and he winds up striking her over the head and knocking her out. When she wakes up, she's strapped in the gynecology chair. She has no idea where, what happened to her or anything. We'll return to the story in just a second. Let's just take a moment to listen to a word from our sponsor. She was held for 3 days, and that's when David decides to slice her throat and dump her on the side of the road somewhere. A motorist sees her and drives her to the hospital, and that's where she gets treated. Police begin to question her on what happened to her, but she tells them that she does not remember, and they obviously do not believe her. Who would not remember where they were and who sliced their throat? She goes home to her husband, and he's questioning her. She's been gone for 3 days, and, now she's coming back from the hospital, and she's saying, I don't remember. I don't know where I've been. I don't know what happened to me. And he just gets it in his mind that she's probably just been cheating on him, and he leaves her, and he winds up filing for divorce. So for years, she couldn't explain what happened to her and why she kept having these crazy dreams of being tied up and tortured and raped. But just a side note, I'm sorry, but her ex-husband must feel like shit now. What was being done to her? And then she was missing, and you find out later that she was not lying. She was not on this fuck fest that you thought she was on and all that stuff. She was literally being tortured for 3 days. And you know what I think is weird? She was missing for 3 days, but there was never a missing persons report. So you couldn't have been that worried, But we're going to get into some of these questions that are going to be risen as the story progresses. But to that ex-husband, she's definitely better without you. Holy shit. Law enforcement, they were very confident that with Kelly's testimony, they would probably be able to put away, David Parker Ray. But the thing about it is that there was a lot that she couldn't really remember. And they didn't want to go to trial and then be picked apart. And, they knew that Ray's attorneys, they were going to give her all the questions that she wouldn't be able to answer. And it would make people question her credibility. So they figured that they would keep digging so that they can get more on him. So that's, that's what they did. They started questioning a lot of different people. They started digging into things and stuff. And a name kept popping up. And this name was Roy Yancey. So they bring him in for questioning. And the minute he gets in and they start questioning him, he admits to helping with a murder of a woman named Marie Parker. Now, this is, okay, so some people have said that this Marie Parker was actually Roy Yancey's girlfriend. But they never, they never go on, so she was a mother. She had two children. They never say if, are these his kids? Are they her kids from a different, relationship? I haven't seen any details about him and her and what the significance was between the two of them. So I didn't, I just wanted to let it be known that they do, some people do say that they were in a relationship, but I couldn't find a definitive answer. So Roy Yancey says that he and Jesse Ray had taken Marie from the same bar that Jesse took Kelly from. Yancey says quote, "From what I understand, he's had many years of kidnapping, torture, and killing women," end quote, referring obviously to David Parker Wray. He then describes to police what happened to Marie Parker. He stated that David had Marie in the toy box for a couple of days, and when David was finally done with her, he had Roy kill her. Roy says, quote, "He ended up giving me a rope and telling me to strangle her," end quote. He also agreed to show them where the body was, but after a week of searching this place, even like with helicopters, they had like 40 people on foot searching. They could not find her body at all. Now, Yancey says that this is probably because David was like really meticulous about his crimes and having anything like traced back to him. So he would never leave the body where they both knew where it was. So he thinks that David must have went back, moved the body. This way only David knows where she is. Now police have more information. They have a second testimony and they start going to trial. Now each person was tried separately and Roy Yancey wound up being charged with second degree murder and sentenced to 20 years. But without a body, they couldn't charge Ray. And that is like, it's really weird to me because they can charge Roy with murder without a body, but they couldn't charge David Parker Wray with a murder without a body. That, like, does that make sense to anybody else? Like, it's very confusing to me. So anyway, at this point, the only thing that they had on David, though, was the abductions. They couldn't charge him, obviously, with the murder, like they said. And they could also charge him with the torture and rape of Kelly Van Cleve. But they decided to take it to trial. The first trial was a mistrial. Can you believe, okay, that some of the jury did not believe Kelly's story? You literally have the woman that is on the tape. You can tell. Please, you know what? I'm going to try to find the link and put it in the description. You need to see this video. You can clearly see that she is completely out of it. She does not know what's going on. You know this. You know that that's why she can't remember. And in the tapes that we covered last week, he says that he would drug them so that they did not remember what was going on. So I don't understand where the jury thought that she was lying. Like, every single thing points to him. But so whatever, there was a mistrial. Insane. So the second trial, though, they finally got a guilty verdict. Now, on April 16th, 2001, David Parker Wray was found guilty and sentenced to 224 years. Along with David's conviction, Cindy was also found guilty of being his accomplice and was sentenced to 36 years. And she only served 20, by the way. So anyway. And his daughter, which her real name is Glenda Jean Wray, but we know her as Jessie Wray, was sentenced to 2.5 years. And that's only because David wound up striking a deal with law enforcement so that she wouldn't have to do that much time. And the 2.5 years that they did give her was time served. So she was able to get out of jail even after helping her father abduct people and knowing what he was doing. She was able to get out of jail with not even a hard slap on the wrist. And Cindy, she just served 20 years of her 36-year sentence. And she was released on July 15th, 2019. So she's out there, people. She's walking around, that piece of shit. So that is the case of the toy box killer. Now, before I go, I want to ask you to do me a huge favor. I want you guys to head over to the FBI website, and I'll tell you, like, I'll definitely put that link. So the FBI has, like, oh my gosh, they have so many pictures of the jewelry and, like, belongings and stuff that were found in his home and in the toy box. And now these pieces belong to someone, and they've never been identified. And so if you could go over there and you could take a look at these pieces, maybe it's something that you recognize, and you could maybe put a face to one of these victims. So if you have any information, you know, you can head over to the FBI website. You can give tips to your local Crime Stoppers. But yeah, please take a look at those pictures and let us know if you recognize any pieces, so that maybe these people, you know, their family may still be looking for them. And maybe it's something that we can all help with. So thank you all for listening. Have a great weekend, and see you next week. Yeah.